One of the treasures of the Christian community is the Bible. It includes all sorts of wonderful stories, experiences, poems, letters, prayers, speeches, legends, and prophecies. It is a literary classic with the ability to speak to different ages, times, and tribes. However, more importantly, there is also the treasure that can't be contained in any book, the living Spirit of God. That Spirit permeates the pages of the Bible and transcends them. For in the end, God is not contained in a book. God is forever reaching out to us in whatever way we can listen to in order to guide, encourage, and dare us to love one another and our planet. Anglicanism's approach to the Bible has been one that has cherished the broad range of God's revelation in the texts of Scripture, in the tradition of the Church, and in human experience. God can be found wherever God chooses to reveal God's self. Over 100 years ago, the then Dean of Chichester proclaimed, "Every book of the Bible, every word of it, every syllable of it, every letter of it is the direct utterance of the Most High." Well, the Dean, though probably a learned man, his view of the authority of the Bible could not be further from the normative Anglican historical position. In our own day, we hear in the press Anglicans and others using the Bible in the words, "the authority of the Bible," often used as something like a club to hit people over the head with who disagree with you. The New Testament, the Christian scriptures, developed over a very short period of time, probably less than 100 years. The books reveal the profound faith of their writers. The authors didn't seek to write theology, but to proclaim the excitement of their new faith. Nor do they seek to write history as we understand it today. Rather, they chose to tell their stories. And because such stories are personal, they're also subjective, and upon close scrutiny are found to contain contradictions. Following their personal experience, the early followers of Christ turned to their sacred texts, which were the books of the Hebrew Bible. To find help in that great collection for understanding the powerful revelation that had changed their lives. The Hebrew Bible was searched for meanings other than the literal meanings, and these alternatives were identified and developed. The writers used what we would call today allegory or typology. So, for example, the reference to King David as the Son of God was picked up and applied to Jesus. Likewise, the reference to the young woman, or in the Greek mistranslation, virgin, who would conceive and bear a child during the Syro-Ephraimite War of 734 BCE. This was picked up and applied to Mary. For the Christian writers, it was their experience of God which was of primary importance. They wanted to ground this experience in the Hebrew Scriptures, and believing themselves to be led by the Spirit, they engaged in unprecedented applications of these Scriptures to create what we call today the New Testament. Over the 400 years after Jesus' death, there was little agreement on what comprised the Bible or what inspiration or authority meant. The New Testament was not definitively agreed upon until the Council of Trent in the 1500s. Although by the mid-300s, the four Gospels and a collection of some supposedly Pauline letters were in circulation. So for the first 1,500 years of the church's life, the locus of authority was not in the literal words of Scripture. Rather, the primary locus of authority was in the tradition of the community alone, which after all had preceded and given rise to the books. It was the tradition of the community that would teach the correct way to read the text. And biblical literalism was seen as a form of idolatry. No reading of Scripture was accepted within the community when it violated either human reason or common sense. Bishop Augustine of Hippo wrote in the late 300s, for example, believed that the inspired Scriptures were true, but insisted that truth could not be limited to nor limited by the Bible. He insisted more strongly than most on the importance of God's revelation outside of the Christian tradition. Like so many of his predecessors, Augustine considered that every passage of Scripture could have multiple interpretations, multiple true meanings. The test in the early church to determine what was true and false in Scripture and tradition involved a threefold standard. Firstly, what the leadership of the great churches believed. Secondly, what was the oldest. And thirdly, what the people in the pews thought. These standards emphasized the role of the believing community. Authority lay outside the scriptural text. Doctrine and biblical understanding were understood as free to evolve in faithful response to unfolding new understandings within the community itself. The Scriptures weren't a straitjacket, nor a book of irrefutable rules, or even a program for living. As the psalmist said, the Scriptures were a lamp for our feet and a light for our path. They weren't to lead us, nor do the walking for us, nor the thinking for us. Holy Scripture continues to encourage us to explore. They're not a rule book to restrict our experience, but a body of wisdom to use as a guide. If you've ever used a guidebook in a complex city like Rome or Paris, you'll know that the guidebook gives you great in-depth assistance in some areas. But there's nothing like departing from the book to discover that special little place that you stumble into and afterwards wonder why it's not mentioned anywhere. So it is with exploring the fascinating city called God. Many paths you won't find mapped. The Holy Scriptures also and primarily encourage us to love generously. Our treasure is not just a book or a relationship with God who permeates it, but it is in the love that we received and share with others. There's an ancient story of a monk called Simeon who resolved on a mighty undertaking, the printing of 7,000 copies of Holy Scripture in his mother tongue, which until then had only been available in Latin. So he traveled the length and breadth of his country to collect funds. And although some wealthy people gave him as much as 100 pieces of gold, mostly he had small coins from peasants. After 10 years of travel, he'd collected enough funds. But just then, the great river overflowed, and thousands were left without food and shelter. Simeon spent all the money he'd collected for his cherished project in helping the poor. Then he began the task of raising funds again. And again, it was several years before the money was collected. Then an epidemic spread over the country, so Simeon gave away all that he collected to help the suffering. And once again, he set off on his travels, and 20 years later, his dreams of having the scriptures in their own language finally came true. And the printing block that produced this first edition of the Bible is on display in that country's National Museum. Parents, though, and preachers too, tell their people and children that Simeon got out three editions of Holy Scripture, but the first two are invisible and superior to the third. The Scriptures are reproduced, they are lived and proclaimed, Each time we love generously, we love selflessly, and we love in the Spirit of God.